Welcome to our second episode. This is the first part of a two-part series where we walk through a stateful distributed system. Join us as we take apart the famous Apache Kafka so as to look under the hood and understand more of the amazing engineering and computer science that's gone into building it. We'll touch upon consensus algorithms, guarantees, and the path taken by a message making its way through Kafka.
That we want to chat about today is, you know, is basically and like an overview of a single distributed system. Right. You know, to be more specific, a distributed, you know, stateful distributed system.
Yes.
Sorry. And the one we've picked is Kafka. You know, obviously, for many reasons. I mean, Kafka is widely used. It's pretty unique in terms of what it does. It's open source, Apache license. And it's heavily used with, you know, across the world, you know, from massive companies like LinkedIn to, you know, small startups. So that makes it kind of a unique, I think it makes it pretty unique. I don't know how many other products are used at, you know, that variety of scale and open source.
I agree with you. Another great thing about Kafka is that it's a message broker, and in a sense, when we think about a message broker, it's a distributed write-ahead log. Now, another way to think about it is actually, in a previous discussion we talked about, we mentioned consensus protocols such as Paxos and RHEL. But one way to think about it is that in the case of consensus protocols, everybody's trying, you have multiple machines, all of them are trying to agree on a value. Here you have multiple.
Just to make it kind of clear to people who might not be familiar with consensus protocols, or you know, might just be getting into it. Consensus protocols are, you know, like Alex said, a way for multiple components of a system, distributed components, to agree on a value, right?
Yes. Now, if you look at the distributed message broker case, distributed write-ahead log case, it is, in a sense, not necessarily all that different from the consensus. Now, there has been this series of academic work called virtual synchrony, which is also, and it did lead to some production systems such as ISIS and Horus. It is by Ken Berman out of Cornell. He's been working on these systems for a while. And he explicitly makes the case that there is an equivalency between consensus and the virtual synchrony, or the or basically reliable ordered multicast problems. Since in a sense, what happens is if you have multiple machines having the same exact log of the same exact number of operations, if we consider the state machine replication model, if you apply those logs on those multiple machines, you will get to the same end result. And you're guaranteed to converge on the same value, as in you get a timeline, depending on the different guarantees, and we'll talk about it a little bit in a minute when we dive into Kafka, you're able to get a timeline consistent view of the data. So in a sense, you're also solving a consensus problem, because how do you get multiple computers to agree on what a value is? And you keep modifying this value, and you log each one of those modifications into a write-ahead log, which is what databases do. Except in this case, you're doing this as a distributed log with consumers and producers.
Yeah.
I'll send links to both virtual synchrony papers on that. So yes,
step in here and kind of highlight the concept of a log. So a lot of stateful systems, you know, distributed or otherwise, rely on a concept of a write-ahead log. So you know, your database does it too. So you know, and even sometimes Google scale databases, they do it too. So except they do it in a distributed fashion. So what I mean by a write-ahead log is basically an append-only file. I mean, in if you put it really simplistically, you're constantly adding values to this file. You're never going back and changing things. You just keep adding. This is really, really fast. I mean, because appending is a faster operation than kind of seeking and updating. Mm-hmm. And then this basic theory, a lot of stuff has been built, including Kafka.
Yes, and actually, Jade Krebs, the initial author of Kafka, and a former coworker from LinkedIn, he actually has a great blog post called The Log, and where he specifically talks about the log as an abstraction, and I think that's a very useful way of looking to it.
I think it's an O'Reilly book too now.
Oh yeah,
Blog
architecture. Yeah, I wasn't aware that it's an O'Reilly book, but
I think it's called The Log.
Really, yeah, I think it's called The Log.
Huh. Something along those lines. We'll add a link. So,
yeah. So yes, that's a great. That's actually really interesting to know. Yeah. So now moving on to from the general statement of a problem. So we can see why this is a hard problem, right? Because you know you can have failures. Packets could be reordered. Now Kafka is implemented with TCP, so it's able to take advantage in many cases of the TCP ordering guarantees, which makes it easier. But the more general statement of this problem, and in the case of virtual synchrony, you can actually use UDP or UDP multicast, things like this. And these kinds of systems, not Kafka specifically, a lot of them have been proprietary, and they have been in use in places, especially in various financial places. And also one of the very early applications of these kinds of distributed systems, again, here I don't even remember the name, I'll have to look it up, it has been for air traffic controls. And in fact, like some of those first distributed messaging systems or distributed message brokers might still be in use specifically for this kind of application. So in a sense, it's a very this stuff has been kind of in use in a lot of very high end, either a lot of money involved or potentially lives involved types of systems. And,
well, the earliest instance of this that I stumbled upon was actually the Bigtable paper, where each tablet of the Bigtable itself is it is a merge, the merge tree, and essentially I think maybe it's a good time to kind of like combine the log and consensus together. So essentially, if every piece out of a distributed system is a write ahead log, so everything you ask it to do first gets written to disk. In this fashion, and the consensus protocols ensure that everyone is writing the exact same thing to their log, and only after things are all written to this log, the actual action takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And this is great because essentially, if one system were to die or something, that log, at least the last operation, has been logged. So the system can go back and run through all of that and get to a state that's equal to everyone else. So most of these systems don't really do anything until they write it first to disk.
Yes, that is in fact the case. But I want to talk specifically to Dr. Pack about the yes. So one thing I should make it clear is that there's in computer science there's a lot of cases where there is a duel. So in this case, the duel is between consensus and let's call it reliable multicast problem. And if you solve the claim I'm going to make, which I'm not entirely certain about, but I have pretty good, heuristically, I can tell that this is likely true or close to true, is that if you solve one, you can use that to solve the other, such as you can solve the consensus problem if you already have a solution to the reliable multicast problem. And at the same time, you can also solve the reliable multicast problem if you have a consensus implementation. So And in fact, if you look where Raft came about, the project was called Log Cabin. Raft is another protocol. Log Cabin is the logging service that was used by, I believe it was called Memcloud, or was it called Memcloud? RamCloud. RamCloud, the project by Mendel Rosenblum, who is also famous for creating log structured file systems and a VMware, many people may have heard of.
Interesting. I never heard of RamCloud. So
RamCloud was an academic project that they worked on in Stanford. And this is where it's an in-memory was basically designed to be a very high-performance in-memory database where you could and where basically you could just recover each machine by replaying the log. Now I have my own
reservations. It sounds very much like LevelDB, like a distributed LevelDB with a consensus protocol.
Yeah, but this is more of LevelDB is actually, there's more to it. It's more of, this was kind of more of Memcache with consensus protocol and with much stronger semantics than normal Mem. Because you can look it up. It's RamCloud out of Stanford. It is by I believe it's by Professors Mendel Rosenblum and Austerhout, whom you may have known about for as the author of Tickle. You know, the scripting language, one of the first scripting languages out there. So, yes. So that kind of wraps up the theoretical discussion, because I think I want to dive into the actual real distributed system, which is in this case Kafka. So what do you think about that?
Awesome. Yeah, go right ahead. I think this was a good foundation. You know, I mean, we can put more stuff in the links, but this is a good start.
Now, if you're looking in Kafka, so to kind of to make the segue from kind of the theory to implementations, Kafka is, so let's look at Kafka as basically, I'm just going to quote Kafka documentation about the guarantees. So let's look.
So guarantees are another part of distributed systems, right? This is almost like, this is what you offer. And literally it's like your, it's a labeling on your package.
Yes.
Or people look at that and they decide whether they want to go with you or not.
Yes. So this is called is the semantics. So basically now with Kafka, if you look at the documentation, there is a wonderful part in the documentation and design that talks about message delivery guarantees. Now it talks about there are multiple possible ones, at most ones, that is messages may be lost, but they're never redelivered. At least once, messages are never lost, but they may be redelivered, and exactly once. And the claim here is made, this is what people actually want, each message to deliver once and only once. Now with Kafka's, now a lot of systems claim.
So, are they guaranteeing all three, or?
So let's talk about. Well, let's look at the documentation. So Kafka supports. Yes, Kafka does support exactly once delivery. You can also use. Otherwise, you have.
So messages never lost. Yes. Yes.
Now the but you are. It is possible to relax this, so you can also guarantee. And it's if you want to use exactly once delivery, use Kafka streams. Now, basically, and that's made by the fact that you have provided, Kafka provides the offset. Now, otherwise, Kafka guarantees to you at least, the default guarantee is actually at least once delivery. And if you want to, you can implement at most once delivery by disabling the retries on the producer and committing offsets in the consumer prior to the processing.
Okay. So, well, before we get into this, I think maybe you can go over, you know, the architecture and like, you know, how it's structured and, you know, well, like simpler
the
stuff.
The goal is I want to talk about the semantics that it's trying to achieve. Now, in terms of the architecture, I think the architecture is really elegant. So partly because in addition to being like, you know, it's one thing to be able to provide all of these wonderful guarantees, all of these wonderful distributed semantics, but that have really horrible performance and reliability. Now, one thing about Kafka is specifically the design choice was made to support very high throughput rather than low latency, because, you know, this is not the use case where it was being built was, I believe it was used for building sort of LinkedIn features. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to.
Well,
I know LinkedIn features.
It was initially for ETL and logs.
Yeah, ETL and logs, and then also used to implement some of the features. But the thing is, it wasn't for building a high-frequency trading system or for
control.
So
for low latency, I think we would default to Databus.
Yes, exactly.
So Kafka would still start carrying a large amount of data that we didn't need immediately. Also, the guarantees were pretty relaxed. So it's like, you know, it wasn't used initially for things like payments and stuff. So.
Yes, but the thing is, because of the high throughput, it enabled a whole new set of use cases to be built, because pretty much everything else we tried at that point would fall over. So with Kafka, and that kind of dictates both the distributed and the single node implementation. Now, about the single node implementation, one of the key things is done is that you try to avoid doing any kind of random seeks. So that is the problem with a acceptable solution in other cases, such as using a database as your message queue, which a lot of people have done, but that's not an acceptable solution in here. So here you're pretty much looking at situations where you wanted to have MapReduce jobs that pull the data out and that data, or put the data in. Basically, you wanted to be able to have a MapReduce job that can go and consume the data. So there are very few random seeks that are happening there, and pretty much everything is sequential I/O. And because of this, it's able to have a very good high performance on disk layout. It tries to avoid using any kind of GVM memory to not have garbage collection pauses, which is a huge throughput killer as well as immense latency killer. And so it uses
pretty common technique now, right? I mean, even Pino and all of them use, memory map IO instead of, just kind of using it on the JVM.
Yes, exactly. So rather than, all of them basically use IO, which bypasses the JVM heap. And because of that, like Linux also supports, and the other very nice optimization has is that on systems that have support for SendFile API, if you do man SendFile, you see what it is. It's basically a way for you to do zero copy transfer from a socket to a file on disk, it will do this. So that is one of the, that's the other guarantee. So you, because of this, you're able to have very high throughput system. And even though this is a distributed system, it lets you achieve very high density on the machines. For example, at LinkedIn, we had all these really, really high-end machines where you could pack a lot of disks in them, but because of the various limitations, we weren't able to take advantage of it. So this also lets you.
Are you familiar with what kind of what were the specs on? I'd say one of these Kafka broker machines.
I believe the original Kafka brokers were high end. At the time, LinkedIn was a Solaris shop, a Solaris x86 shop, and these were high end.
Yes.
Basically, these were the first. It's one of the. First, very nice. So the pretty high, very high end CPUs, 32 gigs of memory at least, and then they had a bunch of. So at the time, LinkedIn was very heavily into really high end hardware. They had a bunch of SAS drives and ZFS on top of. ZFS.
Were these SSDs?
Huh? They were not SSDs. SSDs at the time were really expensive. Keep in mind, this was 2009, because I was actually interviewing at LinkedIn, and one of the interview questions was basically design Kafka. I clearly passed, and then Jay was still in the napkin phase, as the CTO of LinkedIn, Jean-Luc, used to say, it's in the napkin phase. These were spinning disks.
So Alex, you're basically telling us you designed Kafka an interview.
No, there was a design where I gave my design, which is actually very different. And it's more of at some point we stopped asking that kind of question once Kafka came out. But yes, this is one of the questions because it's a realistic problem that people can be expected.
I'm just joking.
But the other thing also to mention, by the way, ZFS itself, I think, deserves its own podcast at some point. So this is that was the single architecture design. Now, going further into the architecture is that we're talking about the.
Could you maybe trace the path of a message? Yes. Maybe that kind
so,
of.
Okay, so you place a message onto a consumer, and then in a single node case, it just gets sent to the broker over a socket using a very efficient network protocol, and then. You have send file happening, and that message is along with several other messages is then written out to disk. Now you have the consumers connecting, and the consumers will connect from a specific offset, and then there is a rather thick client that they use, which keeps track of offset. Now, originally, the offsets were tracked inside Oracle, and there would be an Oracle transaction to be able to reliably commit the offset, and at the time, this is something that we had. So that was how we did the offset tracking. So one of the things that you need to keep track of is the high water mark, that is how much you have consumed. Now I'm skipping over
sure. So that is a seek, though. So that is the seek.
Yes, you just get to that offset, but that's only a single seek, which would be 5 milliseconds when you just need to start consuming the messages. Then you're getting a whole batch of messages, and you're not doing other seeks. So literally, you could have an entire MapReduce jobs, which looks over enormous amounts of data. You will have only a single seek. Now, ZooKeeper is also involved, I believe, in storing Yeah, so there is in storing those offset. Yes, so Zookeeper is actually, yes, Zookeeper provides the, so there's also the two nodes of consumers is the client. Now, as we talked about in our first podcast, the client is a part of a distributed system. And that's frequently forgotten. But the client in this case, the consumer, that is can be embedded in many applications of distributed systems. So if you talk about a Kafka setup, it's not just how many brokers you have. It's also how many consumers and producers you have, which could be a huge amount. Now, and I believe the only kind of limitation on there is the number of topics, which is equivalent for a number of Zookeeper nodes. Now, the other kind of thing I should mention for folks not familiar with message buses is that you have the idea of a topic, producer, and a consumer. So a producer basically publishes to a topic, and a consumer consumes from a topic. You could have a topic, for example, if you wanted to do, so some of the possible topics could be something, could be just like a description, okay, this is a log of all the page views that have happened. Or you could do something, mm-hmm. let's say, another kind of common use case is that, and this actually might have some scalability issues, but another common use case is operational, is gathering operational intelligence, and you can just have a topic for a single machine, and then you could query the topic and get all the data for this machine.
It was used for that, you know. I mean, page views was obviously like the biggest event ever, yeah. but there was also a lot of metrics data that was passed through and there, right?
There's different stuff. Ways to do this, but yeah, I mean, where you could do it based on the cluster name. So this is how you would be, or you say if you're using it for a database, then you could use that to specify which table or which database you're doing. Sure. So these are the topics. Sure.
This concludes the first part of the two-part series. Enjoy the rest of this conversation in the next episode, where we go deeper into the internals. Find out what Apache Zookeeper is and what part it plays in this whole story. Also, remember to subscribe and feel free to reach out to us on Twitter with any ideas you have for this podcast. Thanks for listening.